A few days ago, a free hardback book was in my mailbox. The title of this book is A Study as Far as the War on Children. As I flipped through this book and I went through most of it, I found a reference, at least in my mind, back to David's life. 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 11 and 12. We've already looked at this text from a different perspective, but today we want to explore it again. Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let down David through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. When you look at 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 11 and 12, you find that the power of civil government was used against the family. Here is King Saul. He represents civil government, and he used his power, he used his authority to come against a citizen of a kingdom. It was his kingdom. And the citizen that he came against was married to his daughter. As you look at this account, and this is not the only place that we could go to the Bible to establish this point, you find that sometimes civil government has significantly impacted the life of its citizens. Do we not see that in America? We do. And we see that beginning before people actually began to live on the earth. Back in the 1970s, we of course have that famous case, Roe v. Wade. It was because of that decision that we now have more than 62 million unborn children aborted. If you've not followed some of the news, you may not know that some states have tried to enshrine abortion in their constitutions. The latest example right now is Montana. If there is not respect for the unborn, that begins to trickle down to people who are outside the womb. As you think about children, especially in our culture, life is challenging. If you are a person, a young person, and you are living in a home where one of your parents is there and only one, and that parent loves you, you are blessed. But if you are someone who is living in a two-parent home, and you have two parents who are married, and they love you, you are incredibly blessed. Right now, current statistics suggest that the chance of growing up in a two-parent home where both are married is 50-50. That's where we stand in America. As kids grow up, regardless of the home environment, they do enter into the public school system. As we look in general at our public educational system, we can ask some questions that are on the slide. Are they, generally speaking, anti-God or are they pro-God? Anti-God, pro-God, anti-Bible, pro-Bible. Are most public schools, as we think about them, for sexual freedom or sexual restraint? Do we find issues like homosexuality and transgenderism in the school systems? Are those things normalized or not? We don't have to wait long to get a swift answer to those questions. They are normalized. They are taught. It is listen to the government versus God and His Word in many places. As you think about young people right now, and the author of the book that I'm describing, he is someone who is well-traveled as far as the U.S. He's plugged into a lot of different things, qualified to speak on this particular topic. And what he points out is not new to any of us. We live in a time where, especially in this country, young people are inundated by the stuff that we have here on a slide. But it doesn't stop here. Young people are also surrounded by the entertainment industry, social media, and some other things, and they are influenced in all kinds of ways. We're led to believe that it is the government that should train the minds of children versus Christ and parents. It's no secret that the world is out to get as many young people as it can get, and sometimes parents have been complicit as far as the corruptions of young minds. It saddens me beyond belief that there are parents who have supported transgenderism. Most here were not at the recent men's retreat in Inigan. But if you were there, I was only able to go on Friday night, but if you were there, you would have heard a story recounted by the speaker of how there was a female in Oklahoma. She was being told by her peers that she was a boy. She was getting support for that belief from others, including people from the school. And she had come to believe, at least she'd come to think, that she was a male. So finally, one of the people who loved her, one of the people who did not support the transgender ideology, got her to a counselor who had his head screwed on straight. And that man sat down with her and said, "Why do you believe that you are a boy?" "Well, I like to do boyish things," she said. And she said all of her friends were telling her that she was a male. The counselor, according to the man who recounted this information, said to her, "Have you ever heard of a tomboy?" And she said, "No, that is a new word for me." And he said, "Well, let me tell you what a tomboy is. A tomboy is a girl who likes to do boyish things." Then he said that the girl had a great expression of relief. She was very thankful that she was not a male. We have a lot of people who've been confused. We have a world full of people, some of whom are in government, some of whom are classmates, that exert a lot of peer pressure when it comes to people. And kids are subjected to that peer pressure not one day a week, not 5 days a week, but oftentimes 7 days a week. And they feel like they are living in a war zone. In the Old Testament, we have a verse that maybe you've read and maybe you thought about and maybe you've been confused by before. It's Jeremiah 31 and verse 29. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. I remember years ago when I came across that passage, I looked at that and I thought, that's an interesting verse. That seems to be saying something pretty important, but I'm not quite sure what it is. If you've ever looked at that particular passage, if you heard that particular teaching, and you've scratched your head a little bit and thought, boy, I really wonder what that means. Let's put it into more modern language. Parents ate the green apples, and their children got the stomach ache. Is that a little more understandable? That's what Jeremiah is talking about back in Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 29. He is saying that people, adults, can make some choices. And the decisions, the choices that people make, those decisions, those choices affect successive generations. The child who comes into the world without two parents, he or she didn't ask for that kind of life. That was not their fault. When most young people get into school, they get on the bus. And when they get on that bus, a lot of times they didn't ask for the things that happen to them on the bus or when they go to school and they begin to be exposed to some of the things that they're exposed to now. When you look at previous generations, and this is true for my generation, it's true for the generation before, and even a couple before that, we have messed up some things, and we've messed up a lot. We now have many adults, several of whom are in power, who have made some really bad choices in the past, and those bad choices are now beginning to cascade into something that is like a massive waterfall. We have adults, and again, it includes my generation, who have left God, they have abandoned the Bible, and they cast aside basic morality years ago. We can look around at young people and we can cast a lot of blame, and some of that blame is deserved. But they're not completely deserving of all the blame. Before we cast a lot of stones at youth, we need to go back and see what has made life a war zone for many kids in this day and time. Let's back up a little bit by about 60 years. If you go back into the 1960s, you find that it was during that time that the divorce rate began to really climb. For years, I can remember growing up, people being told that if you get divorced, it's not going to have any real impact on your kids. You ever remember that? That was a common idea for a long time. If you go back, you begin to find during that time period that moral values were often openly discarded. It was a time where people were contending for free love, psychedelic drugs were being used, and you have ideas such as communal living. There was a big emphasis on self-expression and left-wing values. People, as they were having their free-for-all in a lot of different ways, they didn't think about the next generation or successive generations. They didn't think how some of the choices would shape lives for their children and the grandchildren. Sin has consequences. The Bible teaches that in a lot of different places. Sin is like a crop harvest. Eventually, you reap something. And we're reaping some of the things that were sown by previous generations. We have, as we look at society, a whole generation of adults who have helped unravel as well as rearrange the fabric of society. And now because of what we've done, we have young people growing up in some very difficult circumstances. We have adults my age and older, and sometimes younger, who celebrate all kinds of immorality, virtually every form, and encouraging children to do the same. Now virtually every level, every aspect of our society celebrates some type of perversion. It's not uncommon to find politicians celebrating some form of sin as well. And a lot of times that celebration involves some type of deviant sexual behavior, or going back to where we were earlier, some information about abortion. Those celebrations take place not only in public places, parades and other such things, but sometimes they're also in the American classroom. From time to time, people sowed seeds of chaos in the past, and yet now that's not something that is irregular. Those days, as far as just from time to time in a few places, those days are pretty much gone. If you look at our country, you find that there's been a major shift in American values. Things like patriotism are questioned, devalued, and even found contemptible. Did you see the news within the last week? We had some people in a state adjoining ours that were shouting death to America. It happened. And it's probably not going to be the last time that it happens. American values that are based on the Bible are hated by a lot of people. A lot of people. It's no longer difficult to find children's programming which promotes some kind of deviant sexual information. We have libraries all across the nation who are battling over vile materials to be included in the school library. In some cases, people have tried to publicly read what is in the material that's being objected to, and the adults in the room said, you can't say that. That's obscene. That's pornographic. We can't have that on camera. We can't put that into the school record, but it's okay for the school library. If we've missed it, and hopefully not, surely not, there is a full-scale war being waged against our kids. All kids, and especially our kids. What used to be reading, writing, and arithmetic is now a plan in many places to indoctrinate kids. Talk to someone who's about 20 years old, and there will be exceptions. But if you find a young person who is about 20 years old on average, you'll probably find that he or she has been trained to believe more in entitlement than responsibility. And that's a consequence from some of the teaching that adults are doing. You find that the young person who is in that age bracket more than likely has been taught that innocence and honor and moral purity are abnormal. That's where we are as a nation. Someone in this age bracket has probably been told and probably believes that promiscuity and perversion are to be embraced and flaunted. Public proclamations of deviancy are normal, they're right, and young people often believe that they should be proud of such behavior. If our children are not seeing with their own eyes this kind of stuff, they're certainly hearing about it on a regular basis. Each passing day, ideas are being put forth which get nuttier and nuttier. Just when you think that you've heard enough, just when you think that people cannot get any crazier, sure enough, you check things out and something new comes. Check this out. This was this week. Woman claims gender season. Did you see that? Woman claims gender season means gender identity depends on the time of the year. I thought, wow, can people get any far out, any further out than this? Well, a long time ago, about 2,700 years ago, the prophet Isaiah said this, Isaiah 5 and verse 20, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. If Isaiah were working in our day and time, he could have preached this same sermon. Imagine grooming and coaching children in school in the ways of the devil. That's what's taking place in a lot of American schools. We've even seen places where schools have a satanic club. Families are being shattered. Society is being torn apart. And Jesus said, if you have that kind of situation, Matthew chapter 12 and verse 25, you're not going to stand. A divided house can't stand. A divided nation can't stand. America is killing itself, strangling itself by destroying its children. Back in the Old Testament, 2 Kings chapter 17 and verse 17, we read, and they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and use divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do what was evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger. That passage simply says that the people destroyed their children and God was not pleased. In our nation, we're also destroying our children. Oh, we're not doing it quite like they did. We're not literally sacrificing them to pagan gods, but we are destroying our youth from abortion to the poisoning, the corrupting of minds. And God is still not happy. There are literally people who want to create or enforce laws which destroy kids and families. We've seen illustrations where people want to criminalize the truth and refer to it as hate speech. There are people literally in our nation who want to destroy the institution of marriage. And if someone stands up and says, these are our values, these are Christian values, these are Bible values, remove the child from the home because the parents are dangerous. It is hard to envision any sinful or ungodly idea which is not now being espoused by someone. We even see that in the secular work world. It's bad enough for kids to be exposed to this, but when they go out into society and they want to get a job, support homosexuality, believe in transgenderism, or you get fired. You support the idea that there are only two genders, or you are out the door. We've seen it in girls, as far as their sports team, accept a male in your locker room, otherwise you're going to be mocked, or perhaps not allowed to participate. People, especially the younger generations, they need to know the truth, they need to hear the truth, they need to believe the truth, they need to accept the truth, and they need to follow the truth. As we look at our nation, it is unique in a lot of ways. The idea that our nation would begin to embrace the kinds of values that we have, for a lot of us, that is almost a foreign idea. If we look at the Bible, though, and we look at history in general, we find that Christians have typically been in a hostile environment. And in a lot of different places and cases, we find that hostility has come from civil government. Things have changed. And there's no indication that at least sometime soon that things are going to go back like they were. If we're not aware of it, June is LGBT Pride Month. Did you know that? LGBT History Month is celebrated every October. 2 out of the 12 months that we have on our calendar celebrate evil. And that doesn't begin to talk about the various days that we have. Our government, our military, both are generally fully supportive of sexual perversion. Children are constantly being told what is wrong is right, and what is right is wrong. This is, as we look at it, not a new problem. Back in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16 and verse 20, moreover, you took your sons and your daughters, whom God says you bore to me. God says it is, in a sense, that I look at children as mine. And these you sacrificed to them to be devoured, were your acts of harlotry a small matter. God says that children need to be taught. They need to be led. They need to be instructed. They need to be properly guided. And a lot of that instruction needs to come from the home and from dads. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and the admonition of the Lord. Fathers are to be key leaders in homes. Since we're in America, we might say American homes. In our time, kids need that kind of protection, but that's not always what they want. Young people need to realize that that is God's plan, and it is the best plan. It's not a new plan. As you go back in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 9, only take heed of thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes saw, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But make them known unto thy children and thy children's children. It is basic Bible 101 as far as what the Bible says about the home, but many don't know it. Many don't realize that God has said that there are only two genders, regardless of what others say. Every cell, and this was another great point that was made by the speaker at the retreat, every cell in a female body is female. You can cut off parts. You can change things around. You can say it's this or that. You can do all kinds of things that science can do, and maybe some stuff that we can't yet do that one day will be possible. But every cell in a female body is always going to be a female cell. And that's also true for the male body. You have male cells. And there is nothing that you can do to change that. You were born a male, you were born a female, and that is the end of it. Young people need to hear that there is a God. There's only one God, and it is the God of the Bible. It is not civil government. There is truth which must be obeyed. Society, as we look at it right now, teaches people oftentimes to rebel and even to riot against virtue and authority. Some people have talked about taking back the streets. We need to take back the minds. And those minds would be the minds of young people. We need to begin in our own families. When a male and a female come together, and they have children perhaps, parents need to realize that they are the spiritual protectors of those young people. We've been given people, entrusted with people, that we need to take care of. Many understand the need for physical protection, but the need also extends to spiritual protection. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 13, marvel not, brethren, if the world hates you. We need to let our young people know that they are now living, if they haven't realized it, they're living in a war zone. And again, John says the world is not going to be friendly to you. The world is going to hate you. Depending on where we live, depending on who our associates are, we may face a lot of peer pressure. If history is any guide, we will continue to lose some young people. We don't want those spiritual casualties, though, to be folks that we know. We need people to know that the world's values are not our values. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18, Paul said, flee fornication, and that's pretty simple. The world says run to it. The world says embrace it. The world says that that is fine. God says that's the wrong way to live. In our day and time, the family is often pictured as being just about anything. Society has gone into overdrive as far as promoting non-Christian values and ideas. We've seen people sometimes even describe abortion as health care. Wrong has been labeled into terms which seem so nice, so caring, and so considerate. If children are going to be saved, they must be taught. I didn't come up with this graphic. I wish I had. But if you want an effective way, an effective strategy to teach young people, here is, I think, one of the best ways that we can communicate that in a simple way. In a world full of people who prefer to be called by pronouns, I've now decided that I want to be known by adjectives. A few examples would be saved, redeemed, delivered, rescued, forgiven, justified, born again, and sanctified. That's it. That's the message that we've been trying to teach people for a long time. The world says, what's your pronoun? We need to tell people it's not about pronouns. It's about the right adjectives. And that's what you need. That's how you're going to be a light to the world. That's how we're going, perhaps, hopefully, to help our young people realize that this is the broad way and the wrong way. This is the narrow way. What about us? Are we on the side of the world, focused on things like flags and pronouns? Or have we come to realize that as a Christian, we need to be focused on the adjectives? Saved, redeemed, delivered, rescued, forgiven, justified, born again, and sanctified. That's where life is. That's where salvation is. That's where God is. That's where hope is. Is that where we are? If not, God says, my arms are open. There's room. Will you come? And will you come now as we stand and sing?